Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC, New York Public Radio, this is the podcast of Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. This is just one segment of today's show. You can hear all of our conversations about New York's vibrant cultural scene on demand at WNYC.org. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners. Please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC podcasts are supported by Holy Name Hospital in Teaneck, New Jersey, providing comprehensive centers in cardiovascular services, interventional radiology, and cancer care. More information at www.holyname.org.
Every day I pray to get to know ya. Please wanna be close to you. Yes, I'm so hungry. You're like water for my soul when it gets thirsty. Without you, there's no me or the air that I breathe. Sometimes the world is dark and I just can't see. With these demons around, all around, nobody without too negative body. But I believe, yes, I believe. I said that I believe.
This is Soundcheck at 93.9 WNYC and online at WNYC.org. I'm John Schaefer. Today, Epic Records releases the new album by the reggae artist known as Matis Yahu. The album's called Youth, and Matis Yahu has a gig tonight at the Hammerstein Ballroom. In case you haven't heard, Matis Yahu is a 26-year-old Hasidic Jew, originally from White Plains, whose musical world is closer to Bob Marley and the Wailers than to the wailing of the shofar. But who's listening to his music and why? Michael Endelman is music writer for Entertainment Weekly. He's written a profile of Matis Yahu in this week's issue. Michael, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, John.
And joining us by phone is Roger Steffens, a reggae archivist and co-author of the book Bob Marley and the Wailers, The Definitive Discography. Roger, thanks to you for joining us as well.
Oh, it's a pleasure. I'm an old New York boy, so it's nice to be at least on the air back home.
All right. Roger, we're going to come to you to ask for kind of the big picture here, but Michael, let's start by focusing for the moment on Matis Yahu. You write in your article, "When Matt Miller was 16, he bought two tickets that shifted the course of his life. The first was for a Fish concert. The second was for a flight to Israel." Tell us the story of how young Matt Miller becomes Matis Yahu.
Okay, well, Matt was sort of a rebellious kind of searching kid who grew up in White Plains outside New York. And I think like a lot of teenagers, he sort of rebelled a bit against his parents, didn't really like school, didn't really like going to synagogue or Hebrew school. And he actually ended up dropping out of high school to follow the band Fish on the road for a while.
Fish being, you know, the sort of the big jam band after the breakup of the Grateful Dead.
Right, they're kind of the heirs to the Grateful Dead kind of hippie granola rock legacy.
Right, and so kids in minivans.
Kids in minivans playing hacky sack and smoking weed. That's kind of their audience.
Okay.
So he followed them for a while. I think
if we can paint a whole audience
right
with such a big brush, but go ahead.
He ended up in Oregon for a while, and he finally made his way back to New York City, and he entered the new school. And I think, like a lot of kids who are searching for something, while he was in the new school, he kind of fell in with a rabbi who headed the Chabad house at NYU. Chabad is sort of a branch of the Lubavitch Hasidic movement. They have houses and synagogues at universities all over the country. So he kind of fell in with a charismatic kind of Chabad rabbi, and slowly he began, you know, kind of dipping at, testing the waters of Orthodox Jewry, you know, wearing a kippah, starting to pray three times a day, and, you know, he found it very appealing. And he ended up, I think after graduating, moving out to Crown Heights, spent a few years in a yeshiva out there. And at the same time, you know, he was always into music. You know, he loved going to see bands. He was into he was a rapper for a while out in Oregon, and he played in some bands in New York, and he sort of just decided to fuse the two. And I think he had to ask his rabbi for permission, because it's very unusual that someone in the Hasidic sect would become a popular musician.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about, I mean, how much of his religious life, his spiritual practice, are you aware of when you listen to his music or watch him perform?
Oh, when you see him perform, it's just immediately apparent. It's a really sort of bizarre thing, because he has the long beard and the white shirt and the black hat and the payas of, you know, a Hasidic Orthodox Jew. but he's kind of rapping and doing this kind of reggae. So, I mean, from the first moment, you know that this is not sort of your average reggae singer.
Mm-hmm. All right, so who then are his audiences?
Well, that's a tough question. I mean, I think that his core audience is probably college kids, you know, college kids who are into reggae, people who are in the sort of jam band, hippie rock scene, and people who just are sort of curious about this.
What about the sort of regular reggae audience?
Well, I mean, the sort of, there's two kinds of reggae audiences. I would say the core reggae audience, which is sort of a, you know, Jamaican, primarily African-American, West Indian audience, or people who just love hip-hop, aren't listening to him. I think that young reggae artists, usually called dancehall, has much more in common with hip-hop than it does with Bob Marley.
Mm.
And so I don't think those people who listen to artists like Sean Paul or Buju Banton or Elephant Man or these sort of young dancehall artists are necessarily checking for Matis Yahu.
All right. We're speaking with Michael Endelman, whose profile of Matis Yahu is in this week's edition of Entertainment Weekly. And in a moment with Roger Steffens as well, who's the author or co-author of Bob Marley and the Wailers, The Definitive Discography. Let's hear a little bit from this Matis Yahu record. The title track, Youth, actually looks back at the prior life of Matt Miller. I mean, there's a rock element here, too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you can hear that he's really crossing over here, sort of like bands like No Doubt or Sublime or 311, which were sort of big 90s rock bands that flirted with reggae.
Mm-hmm.
He's sort of crossing over here to a rock crowd, and that's, I think, partly why he's become so successful.
All right. This is from Matis Yahu's new album released today called Youth. Title track from the album Youth, brand new record from Matis Yahu, 26-year-old Hasidic Jewish rapper slash reggae artist. This much closer, Michael, as you were saying a moment ago, to bands like 311 and No Doubt than the first track that we heard called King Without a Crown, which was had much more of an obvious reggae beat to it.
Right, right.
So here's the question, and I'll direct this to both of my guests, Michael Endelman, music writer for Entertainment Weekly, and Roger Steffens, the reggae archivist and author. At the end of the day, not that we've reached that point yet with a 26-year-old guy, but is he a novelty act? Michael?
You know, I think that it's impossible to ignore that when you first see him, that's the immediate appeal. That first 10, 20, 30 seconds you see him, it's all about this sort of cognitive dissonance between a Hasidic guy rapping. So I think that's the sort of what's made him, that's the spark that gets people into it. But I actually think his stuff is really catchy. I mean, his songs get played on alternative rock radio a lot, and you know what? They're as catchy as a lot of other stuff on there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, how he's going to do in the future, whether he has like another 5 albums in him or none, you know, I don't really know. But, you know, I think the single is totally successful on its own merits.
All right, Roger, you've been at this for a long time. I understand that your archive is perhaps the largest in the world. What do you make of this young newcomer?
Well, it's fascinating. I just did a 6-date tour of Israel in January with my Life of Bob Marley multimedia show, and the promoter who brought me there had just brought Matis Yahu. So I kind of toured Israel in Matis Yahu's wake, and it was extraordinary over there to see the level of response. The promoter, Gil Bonstein, who's been bringing acts there for 23 years, said it was the very first time ever that Orthodox Jews came out to see a live reggae show.
Hmm.
And he was rather overwhelmed by that. And the response in Israel was very positive. And I had the pleasure of bringing him on stage last month at our annual Bob Marley Day celebrations in the Long Beach Arena, which holds 13,000 people. And he was the third act from the end, and the place was jammed with more people than I've ever seen in the 25-year history of this event. and they went crazy for Matisyahu. It was stunning to see the level of response that he received, not just when he walked out on stage, but when he left as well. He held them in the palm of his hand for almost an hour, and he was singing songs in Hebrew, and he was bouncing up and down like a spring, and the first three or four rows of the audience was filled with young white girls screaming their lungs out at him. It was really unique. It was very exciting to see that level of response to someone who is identified in the popular mind as a reggae artist.
And who, as a Hasidic Jew, has had to kind of tailor his performances, Michael, I understand from your article, to sort of keep away from those rows of young girls.
Yeah, I mean, it poses some curious dilemmas for him.
It sure does.
You know, he can't have physical contact with women who aren't his wife. He doesn't want to perform alongside women who are singing secular songs. So, you know, it definitely... He's going to have some tricky waters to navigate if he keeps rising.
Roger, I'd asked Michael before who Matisyahu's audience, generally speaking, is. You have thousands of people there in Long Beach. The first few rows are young white girls. Where were the rest of the people coming from?
Just about every kind of age and class and color you can think of. It's a remarkable event each year because it brings... everyone who is interested in reggae music out, and the key to his ability to hold a reggae audience can be seen in this. The following two artists were the Wailers band, Bob Marley's own band, and one of the great reggae conscious rappers, Anthony B. And when Matisyahu came off stage, about 80% of the audience went home and didn't even stay for the Wailers.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
That was kind of shocking.
Yeah. Now, there is, as strange as all this may sound, Roger, there is a connection between Rastafarianism and
ism. It's not an ism.
Okay.
Rastafari or Rasta. They'll get very angry at you in Frenchtown if you say ism, because it's not an ism. It stands in contradistinction to all the isms out there.
In what way?
Well, it's a way of life. It is not an ism like Christism or Mohammedanism or Judaism. Isms are things that control people, and Rastafari is a very deeply individual thing in which one's relationship to the Almighty is immediate and ever-present.
Okay, and a lot of the symbology, the iconography of Rastafari seems to be from the Old Testament.
Well, of course it is. And, you know, I asked Matis before the show about his relationship to Rastafari, and he got his back up quite rigidly and said, my music has nothing whatsoever to do with Rastafari. It is in praise of the Almighty, and he sees that through a very Orthodox Jewish lens.
Uh-huh.
I think he's being a little ingenuous because he's using the medium of reggae to essentially promote the Orthodox Jewish view of life.
Well, and also, I mean, reggae can be about many things. You know, there's socially active, socially conscious reggae. There are reggae songs about partying and stuff. But there's also a deep spiritual cast to a lot
right,
of reggae.
I think Michael made the distinction quite well. You have dancehall reggae, which is more carnal, and then you have the spiritual reggae, what we call roots reggae. And there is a big distinction between them. I'm chairman of the Reggae Grammy Committee, and we're doing everything we can this year to split the category in two between roots reggae and dancehall, because to have Burning Spear and Lady Saw in the same category just doesn't seem right.
Okay. We're speaking with Roger Steffens and also with Michael Endelman, whose article on Matisyahu is in this week's issue of Entertainment Weekly. Here is a little bit of classic reggae from the man himself, Bob Marley, on Soundcheck. And then we'll open up the phones and ask you, are you a fan of Matisyahu? What do you look for when you're listening to reggae? Our number, 212-264-7483. 212-264-7483.
But my mind was made strong by the hand of the Almighty. We forward in this generation triumphantly. won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs, redemption songs.
The great Bob Marley on Soundcheck. We are talking about reggae and specifically looking at it through the lens of today's release of the album Youth by the reggae artist known as Matas Yahu, a 26-year-old Hasidic Jew now living in Crown Heights, Brooklyn, the subject of Michael Endelman's article in this week's Entertainment Weekly. And we're also speaking with Roger Steffens, who is co-author of Bob Marley and the Wailers, the definitive discography, which came out last year. Roger, Michael, I mean, the reason that we're using this Matas Yahu release to look at reggae is it raises questions of authenticity and things like that.
Sure.
You know, it's a big question, but, you know, what constitutes authentic?
Well, I think you have to be open to fusion. Reggae has this enormous capacity to absorb other musics into it because it is essentially the rhythm, the beat of the healthy human heart at rest. And it's minimalist music for the most part. So you can put Afrobeat over it. You can put Bossa Nova over it, as Bob was experimenting with toward the end of his life, and other elements. But with Matas, he does seem to be keeping really close to the rap reggae vibe. I mean, there is, as Michael said quite correctly, a lot of hip-hop in his music, but there is a great deal of reggae rhythms in his music. Reggae is 38 years old already. It needs to expand its audience, and I think that's the healthiest part of him, because he does a tremendous stage show. It's brilliantly paced. He's got some little novelty pieces where he does the beatbox a cappella with his voice, and I think he's going to bring an awful lot of younger people into reggae music, and that part of it I applaud.
Yeah, you see, I think Matas Yahu actually probably has more to do with people like Sublime or No Doubt, who
exactly.
are sort of, you know, white American artists who love reggae and are sort of creating something new using that love of it. I mean, Matas Yahu's album is filled with, you know, they have long guitar solos and rock, you know, distorted guitars and the kind of things you just don't hear on a reggae album.
Hmm.
So I think that he would never say that he's an authentic sort of roots reggae singer in any way. He's sort of just trying on, you know, little bits and pieces of it to kind of get his own message out.
And as kind of an imprimatur, Luciano, who's probably the greatest roots exponent we have currently, came out at the end of Matas Yahu's set and sang a duet with him, sort of giving his approval in front of the people. I think the true test would be what happened to that great early white band, a reggae band from Kansas City back in 1982 when they played at Sunsplash. They were called Blue Rhythm, and they came on at sunrise playing ska music with a big band arrangement and completely blew the place away. Everybody was talking about Blue Rhythm from Kansas City for weeks after. So if Matas is brave enough, perhaps, to go back to the revived Sunsplash Festival, which is going to be put on once again this summer in Jamaica, and play there, it'll be fascinating to see how the hometown crowd treats him, you know?
You see, I would be skeptical as to how they would react to him. I know he played at, there's a big Caribbean reggae festival at Randall's Island.
Oh,
here.
How did he do there?
I heard, well, I wasn't there, but what was written in the New York Times that he was actually sort of booed.
Mm. Oh, really?
So, you know, I'm not sure that he is going to really, I think there's sort of a bemused interest among the sort of hardcore reggae crowd about him.
Well, I guess that comes.
There were an awful lot of hardcore people in Long Beach.
There were
13,000 people, and there were an awful lot of Jamaicans in there. And I'll tell you, the crowd went crazy for him.
Well, you know, it really depends on what you're looking for. I mean, if you're looking for someone to come along and sound like the reggae that you grew up listening to in Kingston, this isn't going to be it. But if you're looking for something that is interesting and maybe a step beyond what people have done before, I'm not sure this is it either, but at least this seems to be what Matas Yahu is trying to do. We have an interesting email here before we get to our callers from Abena, who writes in and points out one aspect of the Matus Yahoo phenomenon that we've only obliquely touched upon, and that is Crown Heights in Brooklyn, sure. A neighborhood composed of equal parts West Indian immigrants and Hasidic Jews. And, you know, the whole talk about cultural appropriation and the types of mixing that happen in Crown Heights, despite the isolationist tendencies of those different groups of people.
Yeah, I mean, I actually think that Matus Yahoo's probably knowledge of reggae comes from way before he really moved to Crown Heights. I think he's only been living there a few years. So I think his sort of reggae background is more from, you know, as a fan, as a kid, not so much from living in Crown Heights and interacting. Like the emailer said, I don't think there's a lot of interaction between the sort of Jamaican community and the Hasidic Jewish community in Crown Heights. In fact,
but of
probably
course, between jam bands and reggae audiences, there's a tremendous concurrence.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's take some calls. Let's begin with Charles, who joins us from Wyckoff, New Jersey. Hi, Charles.
How are you?
Okay.
I was just calling about you guys speaking about him being closer to No Doubt or 311 or Sublime sort of band and fusing reggae. But I thought it might be interesting to talk about what his lyrics are, only because from his religious background, I guess he is more spiritually directed, and I would say has more clout than those other pop bands, because Sublime, you know, drugs and pop and dancing as opposed to, you know, standing up for one's rights and really being the man and the human that, you know, you're supposed to be.
Yeah, I mean, his first single, King Without a Crown, is a messianic song.
Yeah.
It's a song about Moshiach and, you know, the coming of the Messiah. And actually, for me, I think it's probably the first messianic song I've ever seen on MTV. and the first one to drop, you know, Jewish and Yiddish words in it. So that's sort of interesting. And I think the second one, too, is a little less Jewish specific, but it's about kids who are lost and how you can kind of find yourself. I mean, his music is proselytizing music. I think there's no question about it. He shares a lot with Christian rock bands who do the same sort of thing. You know, it's just in a sort of different package.
The essential element of reggae is that its lyrical content must be positive and constructive and give thanks and praises, and Matus Yahoo's music does that.
Okay, so in that respect, it's following the old reggae tradition.
Absolutely.
There is, though, Roger, another sort of offshoot of the reggae tradition, and that is the rock bands. I mean, I think of the bands of the 70s like The Clash and The Police and, you know, so many other of the English bands that came to the fore in the mid-70s. Elvis Costello, even early in his career.
Watching The Detective.
Exactly, where the reggae rhythm was just right there. It was the basis of what those guys were doing.
Yeah.
And that
was it reggae?
It was not reggae, but it goes back to what you...
Matus covers both sides. It's an Occam's razor that he's walking there, you know. It is, in many ways, real reggae music.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, it sort of goes back to what you were saying before about how reggae is a type of music that admits lots of other influences into it.
Sure does.
And let's hear a call from Baruch joining us here in Manhattan. Hi, Baruch.
Hello. I just want to say that Matus Yahoo literally is awesome due to the fact that he reflects a undercurrent movement of Bali Tshuva, which is a return to Torah values and Torah observance. So his type of music is like, reggae is just a small aspect of his music. He's really speaking Torah, which is eternal and everlasting. And that's what's going to make him last for a long time.
Could I ask the caller a question?
Sure, go ahead.
That has been raised by some Jewish friends of mine here in Los Angeles.
Sure.
He evidently, Matus Yahoo, sings some of the sacred songs, the hymns, that are sung only in the temple on stage. Is that breaking Jewish law?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Not at all. He's reflecting, he's speaking Torah. Instead of a rabbi, he's connecting with the masses through music, and music is a very spiritual medium.
All right. Well, Baruch, it sounds like you're agreeing with Michael when he says that this really is proselytizing music in an extent, the extent that he has beliefs that he's putting in his songs.
And another thing we haven't touched upon is that there is a connection between the Hasidic sect and music. The Hasidic sect is known for their music. There are these...
The Nigunim.
They have very powerful hymns and Nigunim that they sing. And so they're really... I mean, it's not beyond the pale. It's not out of the ordinary that a Hasidic Jew would become a singer.
All right. Well, let's take another call. Tracy in Manhattan, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hello. I just wanted to call and just to say that I'm a really big fan of Matisyahu. I'm of Jamaican descent, and I listen to everything from Bob Marley to Sean Paul, and I thought his music is wonderful. It's very spiritual and connects to, I went to see him at Joe's Pub, I believe it's called, and the crowd there was all races, different colors, different backgrounds, and he was just such a great spiritual performer.
Well, all right, great. Tracy, thanks for the call. We need to sort of wrap this up, so let me come back to you, Michael, with this kind of a question about, from an industry standpoint, can the industry, or can Matisyahu make his way through this industry when he can't play on Friday night, when he can't, you know, associate with women who are singing secular songs, when there are all these sort of restrictions on how he can sort of pursue his art and his craft?
You know, I think before he his success, I probably would have said no. But, you know, the guy has sold almost 400,000 copies of an independently released album. He tours. He sold out a few nights at Hammerstein Ballroom, which is 5,000 or 6,000 people. So, you know, I think that he is going to be able to, mainly because he started out as a Hasidic Jew. There was no compromising. There's no, I mean, he's very devout in his beliefs. He's not going to compromise them, and that's part of his appeal. And I actually think that he could probably carve out like a decent career as a singer, despite, you know, having to stay home on Friday night and despite not being able to ever tour with Madonna, who supposedly is a big fan.
All right.
I agree with that, and I think his new album is really quite good.
All right, Roger, are there other emerging artists in the field of reggae, maybe in the field of roots reggae? Is the center of the reggae world still in Jamaica? Has it moved? I mean, just give us the, you know, overall.
Well, the spiritual center is still in Jamaica, but the countries where reggae is biggest in the world right now might shock you, Germany and France. But it's also quite big in Israel. There was a remarkable group I encountered in Tel Aviv called Kangaroo, which released a song called Soul of a Man. It's 8 minutes long of the deepest Nyabingi drumming you've ever heard, but over it is a vocalist singing in Hebrew in an Islamic vocal style.
Wow.
So he's pissing everybody off.
You'll
it's just incredible. And it really, really works. And I played it for Ross Michael a couple of weeks ago, who is the most noted Nyabingi roots musician.
Yeah, you'll need to explain, Roger, what the Nyabingi drumming is and all that kind of stuff.
Well, the Nyabingi drums are used in the Rastafari religious gatherings, and as I said earlier, it's based on the beat of the healthy human heart at rest, and it is a viscerally effective form of music that people respond to all over the world, even if they can't understand the words sung over it. So it's hypnotic. It can go on for literally for days. So that kind of music underpins the best. Think of Rastaman Chant by Bob Marley.
And if you ever have a chance to see the film called Land of Look Behind, there is some marvelous footage there of some Nyabingi drumming.
Yes.
All right, Roger Steffens is a reggae archivist and co-author of Bob Marley and the Wailers, The Definitive Discography, and Michael Endelman is a writer for Entertainment Weekly whose profile of Matisyahu is in this week's issue. Matisyahu is an amazing story and a great excuse for us to look at a wonderful form of music. Michael, Roger, thank you both for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks a lot, John.
In a moment, a performance by jazz trumpeter and bandleader Wallace Roney. He got his start in the business working with some of the great jazz artists of his generation. And then later, the health of a major conductor. Is it threatening the future of the Metropolitan Opera? This is Soundcheck.
By the acts of man, God's wisdom revealed in a holy plan, a chance to unite the past with a brother.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast of Soundcheck from WNYC, New York Public Radio. This was just one of the show's segments. You can hear everything we do on demand at WNYC.org. Check out our other podcasts at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners. Please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.